speciale Faenza, Festival dell'Arte Contemporanea, un'edizione dedicata alle biennali. Angela Vettese ha intervistato Salah Hassan, professore presso la Cornell University in Storia dell'Arte della Diaspora Africana e direttore del Centro di Studi e Ricerca sull'Africa. Hassan spiega quanto tutta la sua attività curatoriale di ricerca sia finalizzata a correggere i vizi di una visione eurocentrica che ha escluso e continua ad escludere l'arte africana dalla narrativa dell'arte. Un'occasione per chiarire se e come si può oggi parlare di modernismi e modernismo africano.
Siamo qui con Salah Hassan, ripeto, che è uno dei protagonisti, un personaggio molto particolare, non si può definire curatore o studioso o redattore di saggi, è tante cose messe insieme e da sempre si occupa delle relazioni con l'arte africana o afroamericana, ma vorrei sottolineare non solo afroamericana, anche proprio africana. Ha studiato in Pennsylvania e poi si è perfezionato a Khartoum. Ha avuto una serie di occasioni di insegnamento e di approfondimento alla Cornell University, dove tuttora studia e dove è stato anche dean, cioè preside direttore per un certo periodo. La Cornell University è una situazione particolare perché è l'ateneo nella parte nord dello stato di New York, dove probabilmente si studia con più attenzione, con più approfondimento, appunto l'arte nella sua declinazione africana o afroamericana e Salah Hassan continua in questo insegnamento, che però è punteggiato da tante altre esperienze. Una di queste è stata la redazione di saggi svariati, alcuni dei quali troviamo in Reading the Contemporary, un libro pubblicato da INIVA a cura di Olu Ghibe e Okwi Envezor, che appunto contiene un suo saggio molto importante. Poi ricordo anche che si è occupato del movimento delle artiste africane, donne, quindi The Art of Contemporary African Women Artists è stata una sua iniziativa. Poi ancora il Journal of Contemporary Art è stato una specie di, se non erro, di risultato di questo centro di studi che lui dirige, è direttore dell'Africana Studies and Research Center. E un'iniziativa che tutti noi abbiamo potuto vedere, molti di noi hanno visto, in effetti è stata la mostra durante la Biennale di Venezia del 2001, Authentic Eccentric Conceptualism in Contemporary African Art, che era in un bellissimo palazzo alla Fondazione Levi a Venezia, appunto, una mostra che ci ha fatto conoscere alcuni artisti molto significativi, ricordo Magdalena Pons e Inka Shonibare, poi insomma vedremo qualche immagine. E che altro? Una Biennale di Dakar, se non erro, e poi ce lo spiegherà anche lui. Allora, la prima domanda è: che cosa ha significato nel tempo, da quando lui ha incominciato a occuparsi di arte africana, come sono cambiate le cose? Diciamo, come si sono evoluti gli studi sull'arte africana proprio a livello accademico, a livello di studi, dall'inizio del suo interesse per questo tema?
From the days that I have been, or I started being involved in the scene of contemporary African art, of course, what bothers me and bothers other colleagues in the field who have some knowledge of African art is the fact of exclusion from the mainstream, is the fact that we are not part of the narrative of art history per se, is the fact that diversity in the field of contemporary art is always viewed as an added value. It is not considered part of the larger picture of what contemporary art should be. That is a more inclusive in its narrative, more inclusive in its representation. That has been the impetus, so to speak, or the imperative that led me and some of the other colleagues who are in the field of African art, mostly of African descent, is to say, what are the ways that we can intervene in this field and change it? And one way that we adopted is that we take matters in our own hand, is to try to start where other people stopped, but also not intervene in an essentializing form, is to try to say to the mainstream art world, what we have is art that is worthy of representation, worthy of being part of the larger history of art, but it's also important to make it viewed as any other art. So we didn't want an exclusive narrative of our own. We did not want to start another center or some form of centrism or Afrocentrism as projected against Eurocentrism. And for several reasons historically that I personally felt is that Europe itself is not as pure as it claims, and that European modernity itself owe it to other cultures to become. So if you really just take the fact that as Edward Said said, European modernity has many parents, and that 800 of years of Muslim Spain has been part of European history, that European so-called science or mathematics, for example, owe it, you know, to Muslim civilization. You've seen it in the science of calculus or algebra, and in many other kind of contributions, whether it's China, whether it is Africa or others that contributed to Europe. And of course, this kind of form of European pure narrative has been challenged. Martin Bernal with the book Black Asena, Samir Amir with the book Eurocentrism. So there's so many contributions that challenge that. But in the field of contemporary African art, modernity and modernism remain very exclusive. And the way to challenge it is to say, well, there are other modernities too. But the challenge for us has been how do you really theorize it? So we started by conceiving a project like the one that you mentioned in Venice. We did a series of interventions. And we also started a journal, because very well-known journals like Flash Art, Freeze, Art Forum, Art Journal, Art Bulletin, that are considered mainstream, really never considered contemporary African art or African modernism are worthy of, you know, being included in those kind of narratives. But if you ask me what happened, there are, of course, a lot of changes that happen in the meantime. There are a lot of new ideas. There are a lot of new infusions. Many mainstream curators of venues or museums started to open up and represent African artists, many galleries. But the picture is not complete. The picture is not fair. The picture is not equal yet. And I will just go back so I can allow you to ask another question, is that because diversity and inclusion is considered an added value, rather than really looking at Europe itself as actually a province of a larger world, not looking at it as a yardstick and not looking at it to measuring modernity or postmodernity, not looking at the West or Western modernism as universalized experience that is actually very localized. And so the idea is that Europe had to start to be provincialized or look at itself as just part of a larger world. That is using Dipesh Chakraparty's term, which is after his book, Provincializing Europe. That is where that kind of exclusive narrative has to be attacked. And that is what I think what we have tried to do is to create a dent and to challenge those kind of models of representation.
Con la Fondazione di Venezia stiamo portando avanti una serie di residenze d'artista e ogni sei mesi prendiamo degli artisti africani che arrivano e in teoria dovrebbero godere della presenza, insomma, di alcuni servizi a loro favore nella città di Venezia e di un cambio di contesto. Abbiamo una grande difficoltà a selezionarli perché siamo una commissione mista e c'è chi vorrebbe l'africano che in qualche modo rappresenta lo stereotipo dell'africano, che poi non si sa quale sia, ma insomma nella commissione c'è chi vorrebbe l'africano scultore ligneo e c'è chi invece desidererebbe poter selezionare persone che hanno anche avuto un curriculum di studi, per esempio al di fuori dell'Africa, e che hanno avuto un contatto formativo con altre realtà. Quindi c'è questa sorta di moto pendolare che vivo un po' sulla mia pelle tra l'africano africano e l'africano che si considera troppo poco africano perché europeizzato. Vorrei chiedere a Salah Hassan, visto che lui ci ha proposto il termine modernismi correlato a tanti diversi possibili modernismi che non sono solo quello occidentale, cioè europeo e americano, cosa intende per modernismo, diciamo, africano, se esiste la possibilità di una simile espressione che qualcuno considererebbe una contraddizione in termini, cioè molte delle persone che a me propongono di scegliere l'africano, africano, quello che fa la scultura lignea, pensano che non esista un modernismo africano perché il modernismo è un'espressione occidentale e attribuire questo termine alla cultura africana significa già fare un'azione coloniale. Allora, come dire, è una questione, come capite, molto intricata. Dove sta l'essere coloniali? Sta nell'attribuire una autenticità solo a coloro che disegnano o scolpiscono in maniera, come dire, primitiva? Oppure il colonialismo sta nel negare, come dire, che esistano delle fughe in avanti, delle giuste fughe in avanti della cultura africana dentro o fuori dall'Africa? E, insomma, la domanda in sostanza è: cosa si vuole intendere, cosa intende Salah Hassan per modernismi al plurale e modernismo in relazione all'Africa in particolare?
I must start answering the question by challenging certain notions, notions of primitivism, notions of purity, because these are things that are always associated. So they seem to be any classical form of African art, any classical form of any other art, especially in the context of Africa, it is always primitivized in the sense that it is associated with some form of primitivism. First, for me, really, this hierarchy of material got to be challenged. If somebody is doing, or style, doing certain things in a specific classical style, that means they belong to that kind of genre, what you call it, primitivist artwork, which is really a prejudiced term about certain societies that are considered primary or earlier than others and perceived in an evolutionary type of mode of representation. And that is typical of Western representation of Europe. So that got to be challenged, that it doesn't matter what material you use, it doesn't matter when the artists live and so forth. That hierarchy in terms of value in a term like primitive has to be challenged, so, or to drop the term as well. The second issue, of course, is to challenge this kind of notion of purity, because there seemed to be a perception that, and it happened to us a lot, like when they ask you, can you just suggest an artist that can be included in a specific exhibit? And you say, okay, I'm going to suggest Ibrahim al-Salahi, who is a very well-known Sudanese artist who lived in Oxford for many years, or Iskunder Boghossian, who is a very well-known modernist Ethiopian who lived in Washington, D.C. They say, no, but he's really contaminated. He really works like in a European mode. His work is not really typically African. Forgetting the fact that even those who didn't leave the continent and they were part of this frame of work or frame of reference, or they at least perceive themselves within work within a modernist fashion, even if they didn't leave Africa, they have traveled in many ways. And I said that traveled in some time, the literal sense meaning they move back and forth, but the fact of the locality doesn't mean anything, because at the end, these are people who are exposed through reading or through training to all kind of modes of production within the art world. They are exposed to all kind of schools of work. And so the fact that they're living in Africa doesn't make them purer than people who are traveling. So that ought to be challenging itself. But if they choose to work, let's say, like puppet makers in rural India, well, that's the mode of art that works there. But it doesn't mean that they're not aware of other development in the work. So this kind of division ought to be challenged, because it speaks actually for the curators who wants to represent those artists, because they are looking actually for difference. They are not looking for art seriously. They are looking for what I call it, those kind of artists who are closer to the bush as possible. And this has shown itself, for example, in earlier major exhibit like Magicien de la Terre, a great exhibit that challenged the art world, but it has its limitation. And its limitation remained in when it selected African artists, it chose deliberately to choose those who look different, those who work in a mode that is closer to what they perceive as African, like Akpan, for example, those huge cement statues. It shows like Adiagbo. It shows people whom they think of as really working in a mode that is completely different than the European modernist or postmodernist kind of mode of production. So looking for difference is the first thing that is ought to be challenged, because it is not necessarily a mark of what African is, because Africa is really a very complex entity, is a very, you know, nuanced entity. It is hard to look at Africa today as just a geographic entity because of experience of colonialism you have talked about, because of experience of migration, slavery. In fact, despite the economic disadvantage of Africa and Africans, their culture, and I will say this with all certainty, it is probably the most popular, the most like kind of spread all over the world. Think about America. Think about the United States without blacks. Just close your eyes for 1 minute. What does it mean to say an American culture without black? I mean, Ralph Ellison years ago wrote a very interesting essay that's called "What Would America Be Without Blacks?" What is it that we perceive as the greatest American contribution to music? It would be miserly jazz, pop, rock, and other styles, which are really highly and infused style of with African music. I'm just giving just one example, not to just stereotype Africans as only contributing to music. But that's the reality of the world. So we ought to start by challenging those kind of perceptions. If I go back to your question about African modernism and how to theorize it, how to really think about it. First, I think the art world, before I get to that, the art world has to be challenged in two ways. One is at the level of knowledge production, which is what I will talk about in terms of what is African modernism vis-a-vis others. Before I go back to that, I just want to mention one thing. The curatorial concepts have to be challenged. This idea of a curator as God, that the curator knows everything, the model of curating itself. Because when it comes, and as I said earlier, when it comes to really, well, I mean, it's a time to include Africa, to include China and so forth. The idea is that the curator could just travel to Africa or two African countries, select artists. That has to stop. Because I think the idea is that curators have to stop acting like this, that they know something, and all of us know something, but not everything. And that the collaborative model of curating has to be the model that has to replace all these models. You see all these names paraded from Harold Zeman, many names are paraded through Venice and others, but they always think like this. They don't want to really collaborate with others, but look at the model of Documenta, that's led by Okwe and Wezor. It's a model that is ought to be emulated, because from the beginning, even when he was in the Johannesburg Biennale, he started inviting others who know other parts of the world so they can contribute to it. I mean, Latin America, you can't claim you know it all, or even North America, or South America, or looking at Asia and China. If you look at the history of Biennale, it's always a history of a fashionable inclusion. China is popular, then you have lots of Chinese in the Venice Biennale. Then they came the term of the African, then they're forgotten. And now there are, I'm sure if you come to the next Venice Biennale, there will be a new sort of discovery. But that model has to stop. The model has to replace is a knowledge that is based on serious knowledge production, serious knowledge of the area. Curators have to stop acting like they know it all. While at the end, it really expresses their biggest failure, is at the end, they end up reproducing art history as it is, which is mainstream. They present what they know, and then once in a while they say, okay, let's just coat it with some sugar and add some kind of spices to it by adding three or four Chinese artists, Arab artists. Nowadays they're more fashionable, by the way, which is mostly because of oil money. So there is that kind of changes that happen that are really not challenging knowledge production. But let me just end with one thing, which is the idea of what I mean by African modernism. Before I define what African modernism or what I mean by it, is that we have to challenge what modernity is. We have to realize that modernity should be plural. That is, there are modernities other than Western modernities. That even in the European context, there is no agreement as to when modernity starts and when it ends, and that there are different notions of it. What I would like to propose is, beside the idea of provincializing Europe itself, is the idea of modernity has to be looked at as a concept that can be performed in different contexts through difference, which is what Timothy Mitchell has suggested, is that Modernity is an idea that can be appropriated, that can be performed in different contexts. And what happened is that, so the claim to modernity has to remain open. Is that there's Indian modernity, there is African modernity, and even within Africa, there are multiple ideas of what modern is. It's true in Africa, it is happening at the intersection of the colonial, you know, conquest or invasion. Is that kind of overlap? But it's also started earlier, because if you really look at the rise of nation state in Africa, liberation projects, earlier confrontation with colonialism, these nations in the context of the anti-colonial struggle projected themselves as modern nations. So modernity is part of that idea of looking at the self or at your own artist in a self-conscious manner that kind of represent a rupture with the past. That can be performed in any other context. In Europe, of course, it is really associated with the transformation that happened in relation to the idea of modernity. This kind of movement was a capitalist, the idea of associating with the metropolis as wage labor, you know, bureaucratization, all of those things that are theorized by, you know, Max Weber, Marx himself and others, that what we know as modern. But that's an idea that can also be performed in other contexts. So difference is the most important, but it's also looking at modernity as plural, but looking at it also as inseparable, in a sense that it exists in the overlap of all of these experiences. So that is where I try to theorize African modernity. It is at that intersection of overlap, but it's also about anti-colonialism, about resistance, that it has that nature to it. It's about also how African themselves imagine themselves as part of this kind of modern world. That's where I begin, and I associate it with certain transformation that happened in the African context. Decolonization is one of those struggles, building new nations, that one of that struggle, building new movements. If you ask me what kind of movement, I say Pan-Africanism is a modernist idea. Negritude in Africa in the literature is a modernist idea, and so forth. So you'll find that. But what really distinguishes African modernism is the idea that is, as much as it is anti-colonial, as much as it is nationalist, it was also transnational. And it's transnational because of the nature of those who theorize it. These are people who are Pan-African. These are people who are African diasporic. If you think about Fanon, George Padmore, Aimé Césaire, all of those people who are leaders of those kind of movement in the literature or in the arts are people who are actually diasporic and transnational intellectuals. So these are just kind of the general aspect of what I would call African modernism. I hope it not turn into a lecture, but these are tough questions that cannot be answered in a sentence or two.
Beh no, è assolutamente importante per noi non lasciare sotto traccia questa convinzione che in realtà abbiamo un po' tutti dalle scuole, che il modernismo sia appunto uno, che la modernità sia una e che chi ci arriva, chi arriva alla modernità si adegua, si sta adeguando a una tradizione culturale che è quella in definitiva che fa quelle tappe del viaggio greco, romano, tedesco, newyorkese, parigino, insomma, no? Ecco, abbiamo sempre in mente questo giro turistico e forse ci sono tanti altri modi di girare il mondo dal punto di vista della storia culturale di cui dovremmo essere più consapevoli. Per quanto riguarda il girare il mondo andando per biennali, che è uno dei modi per cui noi appassionati d'arte riusciamo ancora a viaggiare, io vorrei chiedere a Salah Hassan come e dove si è manifestata questa modernità africana, quindi non soltanto definirla, ma anche raccontarci in particolare due episodi che direi sono contrastanti tra loro. L'episodio della Biennale di Johannesburg, che ha avuto un enorme successo nel 97 e che poi è subito decaduta, e l'episodio della Biennale di Dakar, che invece non ha mai avuto un enorme successo, ma che sopravvive e che con continuità sembra essere, direi, la testimonianza più rilevante nel continente della resistenza, di quello che lui prima definiva appunto resistenza rispetto ad altre modalità e ad altri continenti.
Let me begin by saying one thing that in relation to your earlier comment about how art history itself has been constructed. See, I faced that challenge as an Africanist, so to speak, within the field of art history, asked to chair a department of art history at Cornell and asked to think about it as a carte blanche, like reform it. It was in the aftermath of a major review of the department that said, it's a failure, there's a lot of infights, how do you really change that department? The challenge for me is not about the personalities. The challenge for me has been about the intellectual paradigm of what art history is. What you really realize in that context when you come in, a specialist of African art, is that the way the lines are constructed within, like the faculty lines, are constructed within an art history that is start from ancient art, the classics, going through medieval, modern, and the contemporary. These are the main lines. Then maybe you can have one Africanist, one Chinese specialist, and so forth. And then there will be a requirement that the student take all of these stages to major in art history, but then one of the non-Western areas. I mean, you can take Chinese and that's it, or you can take African, that's all. So I thought that was really a model that really reinforce those exclusionary narratives, because it looks at the history in a linear way that move from the past to the present, but in a very ahistorical way in other pockets of the world. Like, it doesn't matter how do you really infuse it. So I found, for example, the introduction to art history very Eurocentric. What they call it, art history 101, from the ancient to the modern. And maybe once in a while when you have a fight, they say, okay, we'll have a section on third world art or non-Western art. But then historically, it doesn't follow any narrative. There is no sort of sense of periodization. That I challenge by saying, let us really break away from this West, non-West. Let's break away from the idea of tradition, modernity, and so forth. Let's break away from those kind of dichotomies in the first place, because that's the one that and begin to think about art history in a global sense. And I find that the best approach in this context, because you're also bound, you can't have a specialist in every single art of the world, but you can at least begin by trying to look at scholars who really look or study things comparatively. Like, if somebody study Baroque, that he or she could also think about Latin American Baroque. And if somebody specializing in Africa, can be somebody who's also thinking about larger issues of theories of contemporary art, conceptualism, or in general, like Africa vis-a-vis the rest of the world. And if a person is an Islamicist or a medievalist, had to think of in a pan, let's say, Mediterranean world. Like, it's not really Gothic and so forth in Northern Europe, but it's the area of the Mediterranean, which was really the heart of the medieval world, where all those exchanges happened between Venice and the East and between North and Sub-Saharan, between northern part of the Mediterranean and Africa. These are the exciting areas that can make people think about breaking away from the older model, look at things comparatively. In that context, this is how I started to think about African modernism in a comparative sense, try to see really what is it that in the idea of modernity that makes appeal to across culture. So in that sense, Africa or whatever perceived African, because African itself is very problematic terms, because Africa itself is complex. And I thought, okay, is there any viability in the word Africa or African? I thought the only thing that makes it really probably viable is to think of it as an analytical category that has its limitation, but is also to think about it not as something that is based on similarity of culture, but it was based on common shared existential experience. Because prior to the colonial confrontation, there is hardly any African who thought of himself as African. The idea of Africa came really in a political sense or in an aesthetic sense, came in the context of the confrontation with the West itself. Because that shared common experience, whether it's slavery and others, led to this kind of process of a shared experience. So that is where the essence of what I really think of. It's complex, but it's about appropriating a concept and about shaping it in your own image. I mean, in the process, this may look similar and it may look also different. And leaving it at that stage. So the experience of the Johannesburg Biennale, the failure, I don't think it's the failure. The reason why the Johannesburg ended, really, it's about the nature of post-apartheid politics, because it is exactly started with the end of apartheid. It started by two who are white curators, let's say, you know, culture workers or brokers, in the context of South Africa. I mean, liberal, who are, I'm sure, you know, part of the project of a multiracial democracy, but they also had their limitation, because what happened in the context of South Africa is very similar to the context of the United States, is that when you came out of a segregated society, all the mainstream institutions are controlled by white South Africans, and the way that Johannesburg was shaped from the beginning as a global one, even though that's the first edition of the biennial, it had some components of training, let's say, for underprivileged Africans. It tried to train black curators. It tried to do workshop, let's say, in the township where the black majority lives. It tried to look at ways of representing South Africa differently. But the challenge has been is that South African blacks didn't have the say. And it was soon after the transition that not many of them, enough of them really took leading positions. So that was the limitation of the first edition. There was a lot of conflicts between whites and blacks in it, because white led and the idea is that they really wanted to open up to the outside world. Of course, there is a limitation of the model, because it was exactly a replica of the Venice, the nation state type of pavilion. So that's also a limitation of it. But inside South Africa, there was a problem between whites and blacks, and it's over control of resources. But it's also over control of direction. Many black artists felt there is a need to develop the infrastructure for black South African first, before really jumping into being global. From the other side, there are people who argue, and for good reasons, is that it's important for any movement to thrive, to open up. And I support that. I think it is always good to open up to the world, because the most interesting movement really happened at the intersection of really the global and local. So there's no doubt about it. In the second edition, which was led by Oku and Wezor, which has really brought a very interesting model, this kind of collaborative model of curating, led to really very good, you know, kind of biennial. By all accounts, it's one of the best in terms of the quality of artwork, in terms of the model of curating it presented, which is this collaborative model that Okwi had about 7 or 6 people who worked with him. That really led to a new challenge to the idea of the single curator who knows it all. So it presented a very good thematic, well-thought, well-curated kind of a set of exhibitions. But at that time, the problems of the post-apartheid even intensified more, not only between white and blacks, who still whites remained controlling the art world as director of museum, as curators, as the most well-educated and so forth, but it's also at the level of exile and what they call them incile. Within the African National Congress itself, within the South African black community itself, there's another politics at play between those who remained during the apartheid in the thick of things inside and between those who were exiled. So there was another tension that had to do with the politics of control of resources and so forth. And that, of course, took different shapes. People felt who all these resources directed to the outside world, what about the infrastructure? It's also about the failure of the South African regime itself to really address basic issues. You have to remember, at the end of apartheid, there was all this need to address a lot of social, economic disparities. And in the art world, that also is the same. It reflects itself in the black South African not having control, not having enough funding, and so forth. So I think it is over those issues that how the Johannesburg as an initiative was killed, without going into details. Dakar remained very viable. The only problem with Dakar really is the problem of bureaucracy. There is no lack of will to try to transform it into a good biennial, but the problem of funding and the problem of bureaucracy. Bureaucracy in terms of the Ministry of Culture, funding that is controlled by the Francophonie countries like the French and the Belgians. And in that context, they were really suffocating in terms of who can lead and who can do things. Because the French also, you have to remember, even though they didn't control many colonies in Africa, they didn't have that kind of power, but over the Francophonie, they still control a lot. And so that's why the problem of funding in Dakar, like in the context of cinema too, like the FESPACO, is the same. You find all of those kind of limitations. But it still, it continued. Over the years, it expanded. It challenged all the narrative of Africa, that idea of sub-Saharan Africa separate from North Africa. Now it is more inclusive for Africa, but it also had a different mission, by the way, than any other. It defined itself as the focus as Africa and the diaspora, which is fine with me. I mean, it limits its mission to that. And I think that's practical, if that's what they want to do. I think so far it has been a good place to go. It needed the support. But the biggest problem of the art world is that people from Art Forum, Freeze, Flash Art, they don't think it is really worth it to go there or review it. And they don't show up. Journalists don't go there. Many of the artists and curators who can travel anywhere else in the world, Documenta, Venice, pay very expensive ticket to Guangzhou, go to, you know, any other place, but they wouldn't go to Dakar because they really don't think it is important. I mean, they may be very good liberal people in their politics, but they really still remain prejudiced in a sense that they don't think it's worth it to go there. The art world is at their exposure. It's here in Europe. So why go to Africa to look for it? They are not like South Africa where we can get good wine and a European infrastructure base. Because when you look at South Africa, it's really a fragment of Europe. So I think these are all combined to make, say, I mean, I'm saying this sarcastically, but it's the truth. People don't make the same effort to go. But I personally have traveled at my own cost for every single version because it is, or edition of the biennial, because I think it is very important to support.
Mi sembra che il dibattito sia maturo perché Salah Hassan ci possa spiegare il perché di questo titolo, Authentic Eccentric. Vorrei appunto che ci ricordasse cosa c'era alla base di questa mostra, quali erano i presupposti teorici e forse anche qualcosa di più, insomma, com'è nata e cosa è stata questa piccola ma memorabile mostra a latere della Biennale del 2001.
The idea really to intervene in Venice is very simple for us. I go to Venice every year. I enjoy it for a long time. But I've always didn't see Africa there or didn't see myself, so to speak. It started before the exhibit Authentic Eccentric. I was just chatting with a friend from the Congo and with other friends. And we felt, you look at all of these biennials. And at the time, I remember there was a French curator who did Venice. And he was asked the question about why he didn't have that many African artists in his show. He said, this is not a UN representation. I don't have to select Africa. Plus, show me what is that great art from Africa. I think I forgot his name, but anyway, it's important that I even forget his name. He said that statement. I thought it was outrageous in an interview in a press. There's this kind of absence, and he felt it's not. There's nothing really worth it, you know, to have. And then even the same thing with Harald Zeman, God bless his soul, he also, even though he was a much more open and progressive in his politics, but I thought it still he adhered to earlier concepts in terms of Africa and its creativity and never really made the effort to go. Although in the second edition of his, intervention, he did. He did travel to Dakar, and I remember we were together there and so forth, but he also just went there quickly, selected a few artists, and that was it. So we felt there is a need to intervene, but we also wanted that intervention. As I was chatting with this colleague, he said, why are you so angry? Why don't you do it? Why do you expect others to do it for you? So I thought, okay, maybe we should take matters in our own hand. We formed a committee called the Forum for African Art. It is not an institute. It's just a lobby of a group of us, myself, Okwe Nwezor, Oluwagwibe, and then we included a lot of friends, Julien Tawadros, and people who are not even Africans, Florence Alexis and others. And we felt this could be a way to think about how do we intervene. And we contacted the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller and others, and we said, we really want to do something. So the idea was to really not to present an African pavilion, so to speak, but it was really to have a thematic, well-curated show with a focus. And so we came up with the idea of myself and Oluwagwibe, we conceived this show that is called Authentic Eccentric. And our goal was really to focus on conceptualism. What is the African contribution to conceptualism as a movement? And we felt we wanted to focus on it. But our focus has been on works that really deal with challenging the idea of authenticity. Because authenticity, like primitivism and others, is one trope that is always associated with African art. That in order for it to be acceptable, it has to be authentic. It has to look crude, so to speak. And as I said earlier, closer to the bush as possible. So there was those expectations. If it doesn't look different, it's not authentic. And then eccentric, in the sense that is challenging the notion of where is the center. So maybe we're this eccentric, but it's also about playing on the word eccentricity. So that's the reason for the title, but it's really focusing on the idea of Africa being a global idea, of it moving in and out, whether it's ideas or bodies or artists themselves. And so we selected 7 artists. We were very practical. But we also actually commissioned them to do the work. I felt one of the things that we should do is to really commission new work. Because I hated to go to the Venice Biennial. It's a survey of the year before, literally. If you travel a lot, most of that artwork you will see, which is, that's why I think new biennials, like, let's say, Sharjah Biennial, is much better. Because it presents people that are not well-known. It gives them an opportunity to present new work. So our focus has been that. And I will just quickly show you the book that we produced, because we felt also producing a very good book, and we divided it into 2 sections, a theoretical section and commission section, commission essays on the artist. And it's really still available if you want to get it. So we really try to say also, we don't want an exhibit that when the exhibit ends, there would not be a document for people really to see. So we wanted a document that can live and survive after. And it would be a document that can be used. And luckily, the book has been successful in that regard. And we also insisted that we'll never marginalize Africa within Venice. Because when we try to find a space, we insisted on finding a space that is marginal and central to Venice. And it was very expensive, but it was worth it, because we didn't want to marginalize Africa twice, so to speak. Because every place that we found is so far away that was cheap. So we insisted on this with the help, actually, and I must say this, we could not have done it without the help of very dear Italian friend. And among them is Chiara Bertola, who I really indebted to forever. She's at the Quirini Stampalia Foundation, who helped us a great deal to find this space. So it's at the Fondazione Levi facing the Accademia. So these are some of the works of the artist. Maria Magdalena Campos Pons, in installations of, she's an Afro-Cuban artist. And also in our selection of artists, we really insisted on having African and diasporic artists, because we really have a global image of Africa too. That is Rashid Qureishi from Algeria, a North African. And we meant it to challenge the idea that Africa is not only sub-Saharan Africa. Africa is also North Africa. Africa is also so-called Arab Africa. We also felt it's important that people look at Africa in a more diverse manner. So we were lucky to find really good spaces there. But it can only happen because Venice, you have to remember, is an old trading place. You have to get to the Venetian themselves to be able to help you. So this is another piece by Yinka Shonibari. And one thing we try to do, because Yinka is well-known or becoming one, we found it's important to have a hook, because the art world can only come to you when they know there's a name recognition. But we mix it with some other people. And it's funny because Yinka's gallerist didn't want him to be part of that show, because he told him, I don't want it to be part of an ethnic show. So, and that's Bernie Seal from South Africa, who did the video. And that's Zain of Sadira, an Algerian who lives in London. But what I wanted to say, one of the things that are interesting is that this is the one moment where I felt we succeeded. I met this woman. I was at the exit of the exhibit in the Fondazione level. She finished seeing the show, and then she walked out, and she asked me, where is the African show? I said, this is exactly what you have seen, is the African show. I felt that was the ultimate revenge in making it look similar. But different as well. So there's another show that we did in 2003, but we changed curators. I mean, we didn't want to do it. We also want to be democratic, and we involve Ghislaine Tawadros. And she did Fault Lines, and this is the list of her artists. The work of Hassan Fathi, the late Egyptian architect, Kader Atiyah, Algerian, who's based in Paris, Samta Ben Yahya from Algeria. There is Zarina Bimji from Uganda via Britain, Meshek Walanga, Saleh Makuria, Shoghi Wael. We stopped because really we couldn't get more funding. And plus, I really felt it's enough. We made the point. I think it is time, especially for me, it was time to move to do more focused work. And just to give you an example, I felt thematic works are no longer the most important. It is important also to focus on African artists as individuals and to really look at the career of some of them like any other European artist. So I'm working on a retrospective of an African artist from Sudan. His name is Ibrahim Salahi, and it's going to be the opening show for the Museum for African Art in New York City. And the idea is really to look at him like any other European artist, Serra or Frank Stella, and just to challenge these mainstream museums to really give an African artist a chance and to look at their career like the career of any other European artist, not when they're really dead, like Jacob Lawrence or Romeo Bearden, but to really, when they're alive, to honor them like any other artist, that their life, that their body of work also deserve a retrospective. And that's what the phase I'm in, personally. Others may continue to do the thematic work, but I'm tired of it.
Volevo un po', in parte ha già risposto, diciamo, con la fine della sua presentazione, cioè con il fatto di dire che naturalmente siamo forse arrivati in un momento in cui artisti africani o comunque, diciamo, artisti della diaspora africana sono arrivati finalmente in una fase di riconoscimento per cui possono avere benissimo delle mostre, indipendentemente dal fatto che sono africani o che abbiano, diciamo, un'eredità culturale, una tradizione appunto africana. La domanda era: qual era il suo commento, qual è il suo pensiero nei confronti, per esempio, di una definizione che è stata portata avanti recentemente da Thelma Golden del concetto di post-black e come la interpreta nella sua chiave, diciamo, della sua pratica curatoriale?
Basically, the concept of post-black, I mean, about the art, I think the art world is going to continue. The inequalities in the art world will continue for some time. And it's the responsibility of the art world and African themselves to change the scene. But as an individual, I got tired. But so I wanted to do things that I can do, and other colleagues continue to do. And I'm sure you may find an African intervention in the next biennial, but it's not going to be me or the Forum for African Art, because fundraising is very exhausting. But to answer your question directly about the post-black, post-black is really invented by Thelma Golden, who's the director of the museum for the Studio Museum in Harlem. And it was really not meant to be literally post-black, post-racial society. What it meant is that there is a generation of African and African diaspora artists who are not bound by the limitation of race or the imposition on them. Because the art world, if you're black, expects you to always produce something black. That it's always this expectation of difference. So she was saying that is, what about artists who are not bound by that kind of limitation, that they really want to do what they want to do? I think it was successful in the sense that it brought attention to artists who really don't want to be limited, because it has always been attention. Take, for example, Anish Kapoor in England. As an Indian artist, during the time that there was a black movement, a black art movement, he was trying to get your attention. Yeah, I'm just saying, he refused the label to be part of, the famous show that was Rashid Arain did. It's called The Other Story. Very old show in England that meant to challenge all of those issues. So there are some artists that just don't want to be bound by the idea. But there are other artists who are comfortable being in and out of it. Like Yinka Shonibari, it doesn't matter for him to represent him alone or in an African show, because he believed that the artwork at the end will speak for itself. But in the context of the United States, she meant really artists who are free of those limitations and racial expectations and stereotypes and packaging. But is America a post-black society? No. Because I think even if Obama is a president, it's still the structures of inequality persist, racism persists. In all aspects of life, and it will take a long time. Not that I enjoy having racism so I can thrive. I want it to end, but I think the reality of a post-black America is impossible. But one has to understand why she used the concept, and that often is misquoted.
Also, there's always been this vague difference, I think, in black art as it is interpreted in America and in the UK, for instance. And you probably recall this this one book, which I thought was very, very interesting, and it has been seminal in the UK, which was Shades of Black, how the concept of black actually is much more diversified. And it goes back to this idea that being African is a very broad notion, which doesn't really mean anything. And I would love you to just maybe to specify whether you find that nowadays there's any difference in the definition of black art or black culture in America and in the UK, for instance.
There are some differences and similarities. You have to understand the black art movement, if we go back to the 70s, like the civil rights, like the black power movement, America has been in the forefront. And even the civil rights idea, it's always, you can also trace the civil rights idea to Gandhi, you know, nonviolent. So there are these connections. But always the black art, the black power or the black consciousness movement in the United States has been an inspiration for the British one. Because it's a latecomer. The one in Britain really started in the 1980s. But there are similarities in the sense that they shared some ideas about blackness. They have an inspiration from the United States, that I'm talking about the UK context. But of course, a lot of them also have work that is related to the UK context. For example, the earlier black art movement in Britain had Asian, Chinese, Pakistani as part of it. It's interesting, a lot of people who started as Indian and others used to call themselves black at that era, but now there was a movement out of that. And it's only people of African descent remain to use that kind of black art term. But I think there are some historical development and similarities, but the idea of blackness really now is really as diverse as it's always been. That blacks, like others, don't speak with the same voice. They may share some concerns because of their own shared experience, but the responses to it is not really necessarily the same. That's why the idea of shades of black has always been important, that blacks themselves, in the process of resistance, may essentialize their same self, but in reality, they speak with different voice. And that's one aspect of African modernism, is that it is impossible to really essentialize it and say there is this one set. I would say shared concerns, but not necessarily same tropes of representation. They differ.
I'm sorry, I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but I got one more question, which is about the last edition of Venice Biennial. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether you have any comment about the African Pavilion there.
You know, because I have been part of that controversy, and I honestly always decided not to be part of that debate, because I think it's much more complex, and I think the way it was really addressed in public forum was not really telling the exact nature of what happened. I decided just to stay and refrain from it at this moment, because I think it has been muddied too much to make it kind of a clear cut. Because from the beginning, honestly, it's not a personal thing. It is about how Africa could be represented. And that discussion is going to continue anyway. So thank you so much.
Grazie davvero.